Hello, I'm Simon Burton and welcome to Arts Roundup, a programme that takes a look at a selection of arts projects, news and arts events in the Cambridge area and talks to the people who make it all happen, whatever the weather's doing. Making fine music and possibly cheering up the downhearted is this edition's theme as we look at a range of stories aimed at engaging people closely in new and interesting experiences. We'll look at the Visualised Public Art programme running at Anglia Ruskin University. We'll also explore the jazz clubs and divas that are making hard times both relaxing and bearable. There's an invitation to take up acting classes in French. And the Britain Symphonia schools local children in a day of music workshops. A Polish dance spectacular gets set to woo crowds at the Corn Exchange. And can art cure life's traumas and help stress people to cope? Charity Arts and Minds think so. But first, here's a selection of events coming up in the city in the next couple of weeks. Tomorrow, the Corn Exchange hosts the Spaghetti Western Orchestra featuring music from the Clint Eastwood films. On the 16th, director of Kettle's Yard Gallery, Andrew Nern, gives a lunchtime talk on sculptor Henry Gaudier Bresque and looks at a collection of his works as part of the Artist in Focus series running during renovations. On Saturday the 18th of February, the Russian State Philharmonic conducted by Valery Polyansky fills the void with Rachmaninoff and Rimsky-Korsakov, also at the Corn Exchange. And on Saturday the 25th of February, the Johann Strauss dancers and orchestras present a gala at the Corn Exchange, Vienna's 19th century ballroom heyday relived. And celebrity singer Joan Baez is at the same venue on the 24th.
You found us! Serving Cambridge and the surrounding areas. This is Cambridge 105.
The Visualised Public Arts programme has reached a halfway stage of a dozen events this month and is punctuated by a new exhibition at Anglia Ruskin University, which harnesses the advanced capabilities of computer and media art to look at intense personal experiences from new and interesting angles. Between Mind and Matter is an exhibition by artists Susan Aldworth and Karen Ingham and has a series of features and projections showing footage of holographic talking heads, luminous swimmers, a revolving pregnant woman's torso, and even what looks like a large all-seeing eye projected on one wall. I'm told it's all about peering into the depths of the human brain and how we experience consciousness. Susan Aldworth, artist in residence at Newcastle University's Institute of Neuroscience, draws initially on the intense personal experience she had in 1999, when she herself collapsed at her studio and was taken to hospital and probed and scanned by brain experts. Her experiences led to a whole new line of artistic inquiry, exploring the very nature of human consciousness and exploits advances in science and technology, enabling us to peer further and further into the brain's workings as we experience things. Susan became fascinated by neuroscience and began to document and draw brain operations and medical phenomena, creating a new visual language in her work, hovering between the subjective and objective viewpoints. Here she collaborates with Karen Ingham, the artist and writer from Swansea Metropolitan University, who specialises in lens-based arts and has major themes of biomedical discourse and museology. She also looks closely at anatomy and dissection through the lens, and new ideas around identity, transience, mutability and synthesis. It's no secret that the idea of documenting scientific medicine with art is as old as Leonardo da Vinci, but digital screens have enabled the two artists to combine older work with current material and present it more vividly for audiences. I went along to meet Visualised curator Bronan Farron, who's gearing up for the next set of events in the spring, which will exploit facilities and gardens at the Institute of Astronomy to look creatively into issues involving space and even involve entertaining sound walks around Cambridge which exploit our mobile smartphones. She says ARU is exploiting its own areas of excellence in fine art, media arts and digital art, and also explores public spaces in Cambridge, turning them over to new and interesting uses.
The work's quite unusual because the gallery space at Ruskin is, it's not what you'd expect from a gallery. It's actually got digital screens, which means that for artists like Susan Aldworth and Karen Ingham, who've built up a substantial body of work, they can actually combine works that maybe they made 6-7 years ago and combine it with current work. And so you can see the evolution within the two artists and how their work also blends. And they're both, in a way, preoccupied and fascinated by images that, in a way, represent what we can see inside our minds. And then when you look at it, you feel like you're both inside and outside.
So it's about personality, it's about identity, it's about subjectivity, and looking at your experiences in an intense way.
Yeah, I mean, that could sound like we're doing something slightly mystical, but in a way, they're both engaging with science as well, and with the contemporary ways in which we can actually, for example, look inside our brains, brain scans, which Susan experienced herself when she was ill.
It's sort of exploration that wasn't possible before. I mean, there's a recording, isn't there, as part of the exhibition, which is a woman giving an account of being diagnosed with some terrible illness. What's that about?
Well, I think that both artists are playing with what you might call biomedical discourses. And if you imagine that you are actually the subject within the, whether it's an analysis or an operation or an investigation or exploration of what's going on inside the body or inside the mind, and the interplay we all feel between both being both subject and object of that kind of experience. Science
now, how is media art and computer-assisted art sort of moved on recently?
So, well, I think there was that period from about 1996 to 2006 when everything was emergent, everything was new, and one tends to take a very positivist approach to that. And then when it becomes everyday, it becomes quotidian, it becomes mundane, you get a resurgence of, you know, a willingness to actually ask questions and to do more than just celebrate or play with, and to actually, in a way, embed and integrate technologies within artistic practices and reassert the more traditional role of art.
The Visualized program is very much about art collaborations and using lots of different media, isn't it? Can you tell me a little bit about the whole concept behind Visualize?
Well, Visualize as a whole was created within Anglia Ruskin University. They had a new business school, and instead of spending the public art money which came out of that on perhaps a beautiful statue made by a famous sculptor, they decided to do something much more adventurous and experimental, which was to invest in soft infrastructure, one of which strands is the exhibition strand, which for which I'm guest curator, but there are also two other strands as well.
We're roughly halfway through the Visualized program, which has been extremely exciting. Lots of people have enjoyed it very much. Can we look back at what's already happened as part of Visualize, Caution Matters, Art and Science Circle? And
we had a number of talks in the first term in September and October with artists addressing mostly students but also members of the public's on the question of negotiating space for art. And then in December and January, we occupied, along with changing spaces, with support from the Film Trust, two shop fronts in the city, having more kind of a subliminal effect on people. We wanted people to walk past and say, oh, was there something in that window? Maybe I'll look again tomorrow. And I think we kind of wanted to affect people without saying, oh, I'll come to this street at this time, that you can actually... You know, culture is also about what you see out of the corner of your eye and the sides of your eye, and that's very much what I wanted to explore with Visualize. Cambridge is a changing city. It's a city of transformation. It tends to veer towards the past. It has an innate conservatism, which is evident mainly in its surfaces, and somehow with the impact of radical art, or art which is engaging with the more inventive sides of Cambridge, which maybe are usually hidden behind windows or behind office buildings, I think you bring into the public sphere a slightly more exciting approach to contemporary art.
Coming up, you've got an event using smartphones, haven't you? That involves people going out and doing things in the city. Can you tell me a bit about that?
Yeah, I think what we're all interested in on the Visualize team, including the associate artist, Duncan Speakman, who was appointed last year, as well as another artist who's coming in next week to work with the music department, is the whole idea of the sound walk. The fact that you can almost, I don't know if you know the term psychogeography, but there are artists who work with the sort of the locative poetics of a place and build up stories and narratives, and artists can lead you on those journeys. So from May, the end of May and the end of June, we'll have what we're calling kind of sound walks available for the public to do using these smartphones. So they'll join in a public experiment.
Can you tell me a little bit about the limits of seeing and circumstances of sleeping birds?
Limits of seeing will be the second meeting of the Cambridge Art and Science Circle. We're really keen that people come along. It's during Cambridge Science Festival. Part of my strategy has been to work with different departments within the university to appeal to a broader public than what might normally come to the art gallery. And so for that event in March, we're working with the Science and Technology faculty and with the Institute of Astronomy. And we're actually going to look at, again, at things that you can, because Visualize is also the theme, things like exoplanets. How do you see those? What kind of instruments do you use? And then how does that relate to the fact that we have blind spots in our eyes, and work with someone from Vision Science. So that's going to be very exciting.
So there's lots of overlaps with lots of things going on around Cambridge.
Visualize has got, it's got events months now in March, and then the circumstance piece will start by downloading apps April and May. So keep an eye on the website visualisecambridge.org. Yeah. So you get to download the apps, and then in June you get to go on the walks. And then also that week, which will be Midsummer Week, probably 21st of June is the next big date to put in people's diaries. We're going to have an opening of an exhibition here at the Ruskin Gallery called Poetry Language Code. And then on the 23rd of June, we'll have another event up at the Institute of Astronomy on the lawns of the Institute of Astronomy. We'll be showing films about space and art and the moon. And we hopefully have a big lecture that night as well.
It's funny how hard times always seem to bring us back to the love and comfort of jazz music, and inevitably it produces some beautiful and soulful divas. Some rather special talent is coming to the city, players who aren't afraid to push their genius to get venues really cooking and create those memorable and relaxing one-off improvised jazz sessions, such as the promise of Cambridge Modern Jazz Club, which is sadly still reeling from the loss of much-loved director Joan Morell, an artist who developed so many fledgling jazz musicians' careers over a 40-year period and became hugely respected in the jazz community. But her work goes on this month at the club's home, the Hidden Rooms venue in Jesus Lane, now refurbished and ready to receive some great musicians. Alec Dankworth is presenting Spanish Accents on February the 24th, where he reinvents flamenco rhythms and draws on Spanish folk songs for inspiration, which he's loved since his childhood. Dankworth's the son of John Dankworth and Dame Cleo Lanes, and is the brother of jazz singer Jackie Dankworth, but himself, a modern jazz legend, is playing double bass with a lineup which includes saxophonist Mark Lockhart, guitarist Phil Robson, Chris Garrick on violin, and Denia Garcia on drums. Cambridge Modern Jazz Club's David Gower says it's going to be an exciting new season for spontaneous and satisfying jazz music from the very best musicians, and will include a performance by jazz flautist Gareth Lockrane.
One of the very interesting things that we've noticed here is that we have several audiences for jazz. Jazz is such a broad church, it attracts several different audiences, and I would think we probably have a turnover of 50% different members for each event we put on.
Obviously there's quite a variety in what goes on. Can we talk a little bit about the upcoming Alec Dankworth performance that he's giving? Because he does things which are reworked from things like Spanish flamenco.
Alec Dankworth comes from a very illustrious parentage. He's the son of Sir John Dankworth and Dame Cleo Lane, and the brother of Jackie Dankworth, who's a very well-known international jazz singer. The Spanish Accents project takes some jazz classics, some classical classics such as the Concierto de Aranjuez, and some Spanish folk and traditional melodies, and reinvents those in a flamenco format. Jazz is a very inventive music. It's a very broad church, and we put on here a range right across from mainstream to bleeding edge.
And also, obviously, we've got coming up in March on the 30th, that we've got Gareth Lockrane coming to give a performance. He plays the flute and he draws on gospel, funk and soul influences.
Yeah.
Can you describe his music a little bit?
He's very much of a rising star. He's won several awards both here and in Europe. It's very engaging music, very easy to connect with, very funky, and something which would be a good way into jazz. It's not obscure, very approachable, and it's sure to be a very good evening.
During hard times, jazz becomes more popular, doesn't it? Why do you think that is?
I think myself it's because jazz is such an engaging music. Jazz performance is never the same twice. It's the kind of experience you can get fully drawn into. It will take your mind off almost anything. And if you're so engaged with the music, it just takes you and totally absorbs and lifts you.
And the music communicates both between the musicians and with the audiences, and that creates a kind of relaxation that takes you away from your worldly worries. Is that really why it's such a success, do you think?
Certainly for me, the intellectual exercise of getting engaged with the music is so absorbing. It can just take you away. Gig.
Now, looking for things like divas, women who can sing to jazz beautifully, like sort of Helen Merrill types, or, you know, Dizzy Gillespie's, or people like that. Are there any really good divas in Cambridge? Is it difficult to get divas who can come in and sing for you?
It's not difficult to find divas in the jazz community, and I mean that in a good way. We have, as a reasonably regular visitor, Leanne Carroll, who's a fantastic vocalist, great raconteur. She can hold an audience and make a room rock with any song, and we're hoping that we'll have her back here for the Christmas event in December. We've recently acquired our own piano with a great deal of help from the City Council and from a very good friend of the club. That means that we have far more flexibility to have singers along, and we're certainly hoping we can expand and invite far more major singers along to the club.
Well, I left determined to find a singer and went to see if there were any new divas in town. And, as fortune has it, at Just Jazz at La Raza Club, in a beautiful blue dress, was singer Suleen Fleming enchanting a lively Cambridge crowd. Just Jazz is a bi-weekly event arranged by performer Miles Sanko, who fronts local band Biju Mio. He says people are looking to jazz as inspiration for something new and real to connect to Cambridge audiences, and they're building a following in modern jazz, drawing widely from Afro, Latin, funk, soul and swing, obeying very few rules.
Where does the concept for Just Jazz originally come from?
The concept for Just Jazz, well, I like jazz.
Yeah.
And I remember, I think a couple of years back, I used to go down to the Elm Tree.
Yeah.
They used to do jazz down there. And all of a sudden, that changed hands to a new owner. And then they stopped the jazz. And I was thinking, wow, it was great, you know, to have a venue where you could go down and listen to some jazz. I knew there were other venues in Cambridge that were doing live jazz, like, you know, jazz jams as well. But there was something kind of missing. The vibe just wasn't right. It was sort of in pubs and you know and stuff like that. And the vibe wasn't quite right. So I thought, okay, let me give it a go. Let me try. And, you know, I know there's some great musicians around that I work with and that I know will be up for it. So yeah, so I decided to.
Now you're performing here yourself, aren't you? In a couple of weeks' time.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, perform here. I mean, that's the one of the ties that I have with La Raza, with my band Biju Mio. This was one of the first venues we actually performed in, and since then I've had a relationship with the owner and everything else, and that's why I like it so much.
And what are the influences towards the particular brand of jazz that you play, as it were?
The jazz is about music with the origins, jazz origins. So it's a you know mixture of jazz and soul, jazz funk, Afro jazz. You know anything that's got a little bit of jazz in there. You know that's the kind of thing.
And I'm watching Suleen Fleming. I'm having a great time down there this evening. I'm getting people really going. You know the musicians communicating with the audience. When you do a performance like that, do you just try lots of things out and see what the audience likes and then follow it? Or
when I perform, well, my band Biju Mio, and when we perform down here, it's all improvised.
Improvised.
It's freestyle funk. So yeah, so it's all about you know interacting with the crowd and having the crowd sort of interact back. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so it's basically trying. You know, you start off a jam, you start off some music, and then you see where the crowd is going, and you take them that journey.
Where does Suleen come from?
She's from London.
Yeah.
She's based in London, and I found her on the internet. That's what I do with most of my days. Sometimes for booking acts for Just Jazz, I sit there out of recommendations, or I just go and listen to music on YouTube, and then I look for acts, and I try and contact them and see if they're right and if they're right for the venue.
Suleen Fleming certainly cut a glamorous figure and hopes to return soon.
Yeah, what goes through your head when you're running a performance like that? Because it's quite exciting, fast-moving stuff, and you have to adapt to the changing situation with the audience to keep it going, that rapport going.
Yeah, I mean, I just do what I do, if that kind of makes sense, and hope that people like it and hope that they understand my personality. Yeah, because it could come across as being a little bit forceful, but I'm not at all.
And what's your kind of performance background? How long have you been singing for and performing, and where do you perform normally?
The Jazz Cafe, and we're doing Hootenannies, festivals, Spain.
Everywhere.
And
what are the influences on your music? I mean, your funk, soul, jazz, all kinds of things, aren't you?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Bill Withers, yeah. Curtis Mayfield, Chaka Khan, Aretha Franklin, to James, Billie Holiday.
What did you think of the audience this evening?
They were great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes it takes a little while, you know, for people to get, you know, warmed up and warm to an artist as well.
Yeah.
Because they've never seen you before, so you have to kind of win them over. Some people, they may think, you know, I'm not really into this, but you know, that's just...
Great to have you here in Cambridge this evening. Really good performance. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Language study can be something of a bind when you have to do hours of solitary homework, leafing through dictionaries and verb tables to get your subjunctives right. Well, if French is your subject, there's now a new way to practice it in Cambridge. Join the Alliance Française French Theatre Group at the CB2 Café in Norfolk Street and learn your French through acting. Organisers Isabelle Geisler and Anne-Laurie Cano hope to recruit French speakers and students studying French who are at the intermediate level or above, and will look at modern texts and possibly even a bit of Molière or Racine during the course, which will culminate in a stage performance at CB2. Anne-Laurie is cultural coordinator at the Alliance Française and introduces the club and spring programme. She's followed by Isabelle Geisler, who's running the French Theatre Group, who briefly explains to our French listeners.
Basically, the Alliance Française is a language and cultural centre, so we do teach French.
Yeah.
So we've got what I would call classical French lesson. And we thought, what about offering or giving the opportunity to students to speak French, study French, learn French in another way than in a classroom, writing the lesson down and learning by heart French?
Do you think that French is more memorable if you do it within the context of something dramatic and exciting like that? Because it gives you something to hang the language on.
I think if you have fun during the lesson, whatever the lesson is, theatre or French lesson in a classroom, I think you remember more than if it's a I would say more classical, and then there's no interaction with the teacher and the student. I think the main point is having fun. Yeah. Yes.
How does the group work? I mean, presumably people volunteer, they can join up here, and then you run a session. What would a typical session be like?
A typical session, maybe Isabelle could talk about it, but it's open to all if you've got I would say medium level in French.
A medium level understanding, you can participate.
Yes.
And are children welcome as well?
It's a workshop for people age over 18. We tried also to launch a workshop for children and teenager, but that's something else. Yes.
Where did this whole idea start in the first place?
I think the idea comes from Isabelle and one of our colleague Virginie.
Yeah.
And they were talking about this project, and I got in the project when I heard about it, and I thought, oh, that could be a good idea for the Alliance Française to have this kind of new project and try to launch it together.
Mm. Now, Alliance Française does a lot of different things, doesn't it, in Cambridge? I mean, you can log onto their website and have a look at it, but it's business courses, it's courses for French students, there's film clubs and all kinds of other things. Can you tell me a little bit about those? Because you've given me a programme of activities.
To do a summary in 2 minutes. So we've got French lessons starting for children age 5, lesson for teenagers, adults. We also have cultural activities. We've got a cine club, we've got a reading group.
It's one thing to study French, but it's another thing to actually activate it, and that's the great thing about doing this theatre group, basically, is that anybody who's perhaps struggling a bit with their French, they need a bit of a push, they need a little bit of a chance to use it. Theatre is a great way to do that.
It's giving a frame, to the lesson. I mean, lesson, it's more an activity.
What about the facilities here at CB2? Because there's a basement here, isn't there, which has a performance area and a stage. I mean, how many people could be involved in one of these groups?
We like to keep the group small, no more than 10, 12 people. So everybody has the opportunity to practice French.
Yeah.
The basement at the CB2 is great for that because it's a small venue and you can really feel a friendly atmosphere, and we're happy with the CB2.
Now, what are the texts? Are you doing sort of Molière or Racine or any of the old French theatre, or is it all modern stuff that you're having a look at, shorter plays?
There's all sorts of texts. I think Isabelle was working on more contemporary play, but they're practicing. That it's not only working on this specific text, they're practicing lots of different texts, and some of them might be from classical.
So theater. It's basically learning to act as well. So you'd be doing like extracts from
things.
Yes,
there's different. There's different angles, I would say, in this activity. You learn how to play, and you learn French, and you make friends as well.
Okay, now you've also got a festival coming up for Alliance Française. Can you tell me a bit about that?
So the festival's called Myriad Festival. It takes place in March, and we've got 8 events on, for everybody. We've got a film club, film screenings, storytelling for children in English, so everybody's welcome. We've got a concert in partnership with the Iran Heritage Foundation. It's a musician called Roya Arab, who is coming with her musicians. It's going to take place at the Emmanuel College. We've got films for children. We also have a cookery class, a Persian style picnic. It's a free event, so everybody's welcome again. A reading group and museum visit for adults. So plenty is happening in March, and you can check out on our website for all the info.
C'est quoi agit-il?
Donc il s'agit d'un cours de 2 heures le lundi soir, de 7h à 9h. Et c'est ouvert à toutes les personnes qui souhaitent pratiquer et améliorer leur français à travers donc, le théâtre français, les techniques de théâtre. Donc on a commencé le cours de théâtre l'année dernière, en mars 2011, puis ouvrir donc cette classe avec 7 étudiants. Et on a travaillé donc des extraits de pièces de théâtre. Moi, je pense que c'est une très bonne méthode pour apprendre le français parce que ce n'est pas un cours classique assis à une table à écouter le professeur. C'est beaucoup en s'amusant, en mémorisant des textes et en découvrant donc, la culture française.
Qu'est-ce qui se passe dans la classe?
D'accord. Donc, 2 heures, c'est assez court, mais on commence toujours par des petits exercices de technique de théâtre pour se chauffer. Et après, travail d'improvisation de scène. Et puis, travail sur des extraits de pièces de théâtre.
Getting your children motivated enough to take up music and practice their instrument can be quite a challenge, like all creative learning. Well, next Saturday, a group of children are booked in to make music with the help of the prestigious Britain Symphonia at West Road Concert Hall in Cambridge. Tweet, Chirp and Flap Your Wings in Time celebrates birds and bird songs as a family hands-on music day and features 7 workshops to help children discover their instruments with Britain Symphonia musicians and features a lunchtime concert. Although tickets for this session are now sold out, spectators are welcome, I'm told, and the event will be repeated. The Britain Symphonia's Creative Learning Director, Sophie Dunn, introduces the workshop.
We've held this event every year for, I think, about the last 5 or 6 years at West Road Concert Hall in Cambridge. And the idea is really to make what the orchestra does available to a wider community and hopefully to inspire children and families to get more involved with music. So people can come along and take part in a wide range of workshops, from making instruments to composing music. They can take part in playing in a concert alongside Britain Symphonia. And the idea is that it's as open, friendly and fun as possible while still including some great music for people to listen to.
That takes a great deal of discipline to reach the kind of level that your orchestra plays at. How important is it for kids to actually get some experience and start early if they want to become a musician?
I think you can start at any age, but I think if you asked most of our musicians, they probably first picked up an instrument at age 4, 5, 6 or thereabouts. So certainly it does take years of practice. But I think one of the reasons we do this day is to say that you can access music at lots of different levels, whether you want to be a professional performer or whether you just want to enjoy listening to it. So hopefully there's something for people to access at all of those levels.
Have you ever discovered any prodigies in Cambridge, child prodigies who suddenly have the kind of the Mozart touch and are absolutely brilliant at music from an early age? Is that something that ever happens? Is it sort of once in a blue moon that happens, or does it happen from time to time?
You do find when we go into schools, you will sometimes find that the workshop leader or the musicians will identify a child as having a talent, and perhaps the teacher didn't always pick up on that, or often they have. And it's exciting to be able to spot that. Now, I know there are some prodigies around in Cambridge who do come to our events. Whether we could take any credit for discovering them, I don't know.
Now how does it improve your life? I mean, obviously music is a wonderful medium to work in, but there are lots of things that are good for both study, discipline, for learning music, and then there's opportunities for things like travel as well if you do get involved in it.
That's right, and one of the reasons we run the Creative Learning Programme is to look at all the other benefits of music and how it can enhance communication skills and collaboration and being in a team and being part of something bigger. And all of those are really important things for children and adults. And yes, certainly the opportunities for travelling around the world, which Britain Symphonia does, are there as well.
But many people might be scared off by the two things, the cost of the instruments, but also the cost of tuition is quite prohibitive. Is it possible to get grants and things like that for kids to take up music who perhaps don't come from very wealthy backgrounds?
There are grants around. It's not something that I know too much about, but I know there's an organisation, for example, called Awards for Young Musicians, which does support young people in greater financial difficulties to pay for instruments and lessons. And there's the Wider Opportunities Scheme, which is a nationwide scheme whereby every child in Key Stage 2 has the opportunity to learn a musical instrument at school. And that's something that we work alongside in places as well.
Now, in this particular workshop called Family Music Day, Tweet, Chirp, Flap Your Wings in Time, yes. What would happen in a session like that, typically?
Well, it's a whole day of activities. The centrepiece is the lunchtime concert, which is at 1:15 p.m. And that's an hour-long concert of classical music, which has been specially selected to appeal to this age group and will be presented, we hope, in a way that's appealing. Throughout the morning, there are workshops. Each child will probably go to two or three workshops. They might make their own instrument, they might compose a piece of music, they might sing, they might play the gamelan. And then they'll come and take part in the lunchtime concert as well. And then in the afternoon, there's an opportunity for everyone to come and have a go at instruments that they might not have played before.
What are the range of the instruments that are available for this?
We've borrowed some instruments. We've, in fact, Cambridge Strings and Woodwind and Reed have very kindly lent us some instruments. So we'll have a range of string instruments and wind instruments for people to try. And our musicians will be on hand to help them get their heads around it.
Now if people want to get just a taster for the kind of things that you do, they can look at some of the podcast videos on your website, can't they?
That's right. We try and issue a podcast or a video cast attached to most of the projects that we do, so there's now quite a good archive, which gives a good idea of what Britain Symphonia is about.
And what about things forthcoming in the spring? We've got some other events that are coming along.
We do. We've got a concert in Saffron Walden at the beginning of March, which will include some performances of pieces composed by A-level students working with Elspeth Brooke and some musicians from Britain Symphonia. In February, we've got our annual Cambridge University Composers Workshop, where the composer Oliver Nusson will be mentoring six young student composers from the university. And then we're also working with a range of schools in Cambridge and elsewhere, including Manor Community College. We're about to launch Britain Symphonia Academy, which is going to be an opportunity for very talented young musicians to come and play with Britain Symphonia. We're going to be holding auditions, I believe, in March and April for advanced young musicians, and then starting weekend courses as we go into the next academic year. And in fact, the Academy is going to be performing as part of Britain Symphonia's 20th birthday concert at the Barbican in October. So it's a really exciting new project for us. And if anybody's interested in auditioning for the Academy, they should have a look at our website and details will be announced very soon.
The cold weather can blow in some interesting things from Europe's northeast, but it's not always snow that arrives to give things some new colour. If you fancy something entirely new for family entertainment, you might try the Polish Dancing Spectacular, which runs on Saturday and Sunday next weekend at the Corn Exchange. For the first time, it features bright and colourful traditional costumes and lively onstage antics involving dancing with axes and hatchets and plenty of jumping girls in the folk tradition. Organiser Nick Mazur previews the show, which features the very best of Polish traditional culture.
Okay, Nick, here we are at the Polish Club, a famous hub in Cambridge for Polish activities. We've got a really good show coming along. Can you tell me a little bit about it?
Yeah, it's a really exciting show. We've got 12 groups coming from across England, from Birmingham, from Manchester, from London, from Slough, from Southampton, who will be putting on a spectacular display of Polish song and dance.
Now, this is not ordinary stuff at all, is it? I mean, it's bright costumes, it's surprising, it's not like anything that people are used to in Cambridge at all, is it?
It's something that's truly unique to Poland. Each Polish region, town, has its own dances, its own songs, its own costumes. And what the groups do is very, very authentically perform these dances, which have originated in Poland.
Now does the singing involved originate from Polish folklore and things like that?
Yeah, it's all traditional Polish folk songs. We also have some musicians who've come from Poland to help our English bands, give them a boost of authentic Polish sound.
Now is this music the kind that comes without a normal musical scale, or is it something that you can write up as music, or is it this kind of soulful chanting that comes from a lot of the folklore that comes from ever that side of the world?
It's certainly not soulful. It's very lively. Yeah. A lot of the musicians, the original folk musicians, They don't have a score. They just play the songs that they learned as children that they've played
that
throughout
they come
their
from
lives.
Memory. Yeah, fantastic. Okay, now why is it particularly worth seeing for Cambridge people? Can you give me a little idea of some of the highlights of what's going to happen?
Well,
on stage?
It's something really unique. All our groups are amateurs, and there's a huge array of age ranges, who'll be performing. There's young people, there's older people, there's people even who are the same age as me. And if you want to see me, then look at my grey hair. But there's some spectacular action dances with hatchets, with axes, which one of the groups will be performing. There are lots of spins, lots of lifts of the girls, lots of jumping. It will truly be a fantastic evening.
Now, these songs differentiate because you have different songs for different occasions, don't you? So one with the hatchets would be about what? About...
Well, one with the hatchets would be the mountain men.
Yeah.
And what they're doing is singing about their journey through the woods. They might have been hunting. They might even have been out robbing. There's lots of meanings to the songs.
And other songs for wooing lovers and for weddings.
Lots of songs for all that, Simon. There's some love songs, there's some very slow songs which the girls sing, and there's lots of flirting songs. If you just look at the meaning of some of the words, then there's a great deal of flirting goes on between the men and the women.
Now, to have a big show like this at the Corn Exchange, is this special for the Polish community? Because obviously the Polish community in Cambridge is growing very rapidly. There are big schools projects, there's historical projects being run about the Polish community, and now you're seeing the art side of it hitting the Corn Exchange.
Yeah.
What does it mean amongst the people who are Polish in Cambridge when something like this comes down?
Well, it's quite interesting because lots of the Poles in Cambridge, the new arrivals who've come recently from Poland, may not have seen lots of folk dancing in Poland. The Polish community who came here after the war, settled after the war and built the Polish club that we're sitting in now, well, they kept their traditions going. They kept their traditions from Poland. But Poland has undergone changes recently. It's a very modern country. A great deal of new influences have come in. And so Polish folk dancing in Poland isn't done as frequently as it used to be.
A new sound for a new generation. This is Cambridge 105.
If you've hit something of a crisis in your life in today's pressured world and really don't know where to turn next that won't just add to your problems, you might find expressing yourself with art not only gives you some release, but also introduces you to some new and creative friends. The scenario has sparked a national competition called Outside In, running for the next 6 months, which aims to help people through difficult times and put them in touch with their feelings through the art world, which can sometimes be difficult to access. Charity organisation Arts and Minds is launching an induction workshop on February the 16th at offices in Norfolk Street in Cambridge, and hopes to attract local people with problems and disabilities that would benefit from arts activities. Outside In has an online gallery exhibiting over 100 artists, and the scheme will culminate in an exhibition for some artists' work in the prestigious Pallant House Gallery in Chichester in 2013. Gavin Clayton, Executive Director of Arts and Minds, introduces the competition project.
We're working in partnership with an organisation called Outside In, who are based at the Pallant House Gallery in Chichester. For several years, they've run a gallery, an online gallery, and a competition for people who consider themselves outside of the arts world. That might be because they're prisoners. It might be because they're experiencing a particular set of things in their life that mean that maybe they're working in a medium that isn't considered trendy at the moment, or they've experienced mental health problems, or they're street homeless, or it can be a whole range of factors that they consider themselves, their access to the arts world is diminished. And this gives them an opportunity to promote and publicise their work.
Now, if you're going through a very distressing time, whether you're mentally ill or homeless, or you know, you're going through a family crisis or whatever, how important is it to have an opportunity to express yourself using art?
It can serve a lot of different functions. One is, it's a way of expressing yourself non-verbally. It's a way of engaging with other people, with a group. So there's a really strong element of it that's social. And in terms of what humans need, I mean, if you go back millions of years to the beginning of human history, people they've needed to make objects. They've needed to make tools to survive, to make leaps in development, to grow and change and explore the world. But they've not only made those things with a function, they've created beautiful objects. So there is something very central to being human that involves making objects. We consume objects these days, on the whole. We don't make things, generally. That leaves a hole, I think, in human experience. And what the arts gives is it starts to fill that hole and make people feel, indeed, whole again, I think.
Now, if this appeals to you, there's going to be an event here on the 16th of February. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Okay, we're taking bookings. We do need to be contacting in advance. It's not just an open drop-in. It's called an artist surgery day, where people who consider that they have artwork that they would want to bring to a wider audience can come along. We will help them upload those images to the online gallery, write an artist statement, write a personal statement that talks about why they consider themselves suitable for this scheme, why they feel they are outside of the arts world, what it is about their circumstances that contribute to that. And that's a private statement. That's not making a public statement about any disability or experiences you've had. That's just for the organisers.
Now, I've been having a look at the Outside In website, which has work by hundreds of artists on it. And people can access this at outsidein.org.uk. But it does show some actually very talented work that's gone up there. And that gives you a certain sense of achievement, doesn't it, to actually see the work up there on the website?
Absolutely. I think that public sharing, for an artist, that's a big step. There's lots of artists never show their work for a whole range of reasons, because it's an intensely personal process for many artists. So to take that step, to show it, is a big step. And that's why the surgery days are there, to support the people in that. And they don't have to enter the competition. There is a competition where artists are selected, and then they are part of a national exhibition then that tours around the whole of the UK. But you don't have to enter that. It can just be a platform for you to promote your work, so you can direct people to it. Fine.
It's Arts and Minds. It's Outside In, an event on the 16th of February at 41 to 51 Norfolk Street in Cambridge. And for anyone who doesn't know where that is, it's just in the little courtyard where the Hot Box Cafe is, and there's a sign on Norfolk Street that lets you know what's happening. Can you tell me a bit about what's actually going to happen there at that event? You're just going to meet people, or are you going to show off work?
For that surgery day, we have 45-minute slots that people can phone and book. In that 45 minutes, they'll be supported to write an artist statement, to write their personal statement, and then they need to bring along 5 pieces of their work, which either already has been photographed or can be photographed or scanned in and then uploaded to the website. So you will, once you leave the surgery day, you will have your work on the Outside In site. You will be up on the gallery. So once somebody's been accepted onto the Arts on Prescription, what they will experience is a weekly workshop of 2 hours in length for a period of 12 weeks. It'll last about 3 months, but hopefully at the end of it you'll have surprised yourself and you'll have learned some new skills, and you might continue to stay involved with cultural activities in the city.
And that's all we have time for in this edition of Arts Roundup. I'm Simon Burton, and I hope you enjoyed the show.